When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, listeners. Thank you for downloading this first episode in our new Ghibliotech in Japan mini-series. We're really excited to share these recordings with you. We recorded two episodes while we're out in Japan, and now we're back in the UK where it's grey and dismal and rainy. We're going to be catching up with a few final episodes at the end of the mini-series too. Jake, how are you taking the jet lag, the return to the everyday life in the UK?
I managed to go to sleep at 7:30 p.m. on one night. So that was a strange day, strange evening, strange night. It's been a couple of days now. I think I'm fully adjusted. I did have to really grind out watching a Bake Off episode all the way to the late hour of 9:15, but I made it, and I've lived to tell the tale.
Oh, brilliant! I on Halloween night, my partner and I watched Talk to Me. By all accounts, the edge of your seat, gripping horror of the year, and I fell asleep three times during it. So I'm out to try that again. It's been quite an adjustment period coming back and going from, what are we doing, 30,000 steps a day on average.
Yep.
Often being in two cities in the same day, starting in one place, ending in the other. And now being back pretty much within the four walls of my office, barely making my 10K steps, barely seeing six people per day is quite a culture shock. But let's tee up this first episode. So one of the first things we did while we were out in Japan is we went to Universal Studios Japan, which is just outside of Osaka. And we got together, the three of us, in our hotel room to run through our top 10 rides of the day. Unfortunately, we only got on 10 rides. So it was a very all-encompassing list of rides, wasn't it, Jake?
Yeah, and an amazing day, and we won't go into too much into it because we spend an hour going into it in the recording you're about to hear. But a wonderful theme park experience, and very different to our Ghibli park experience, which will be in the next episode of this run.
Yeah, absolutely. Tune in next week for that. But we should say thank you to the JNTO, the Japanese National Tourism Organization, for helping us plan our trip. Also to the hotels that we thank throughout the episodes for shacking us up for our time out in Japan. There's also a really special extra tidbit at the end of the episode for people who want to stick around, not only through our hour-long chat about USJ, but then stick around past the credits. We have a special message from, you know, we are two lads that were enjoying USJ, you and me, Jake, but we also have a message from Ossian and Finian. Colin, friend of the show, Robbie Colin, was also out there with his family doing almost the opposite journey to us up and down Japan in the same week, but Ossian and Finian were at a USJ a bit later in the week to us and wanted to contribute their top 10 once they knew that we had our top 10.
Well, and I think it's important to say that USJ is not primarily aimed in all aspects to 30-something men. And a theme park, one that contains a minion area, it perhaps does have a demographic that slightly skews a bit younger. So I think it's good to have that alternate point of view represented on this episode.
Although we are kids at heart, we are not literally kids. So it's great to have that opinion straight from the source. Although really fascinating to see where we kind of align and depart from each other on our opinions on the actual rides. So stick around through the credits for that. But for now, you can hear me, Jake and Steph in a hotel room going back across our crazy day at Universal Studios Japan.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Ghibli Attack, the podcast that travels all the way to Japan to talk about things not just related to Studio Ghibli, but related to all things Japan. I'm Michael Leader.
I'm Steph Watts.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and I've got Express Pass.
So join us on our quest into the glorious world of Japan. So Jake, Steph, we're recording today for the first time in the same room in years. I can't actually remember the last time we recorded all in the same room.
I can't either.
It might even be
pre-pandemic. Yeah, maybe in the Acast office.
Yeah,
what a time.
God. 3 years ago. Yeah. But here we are, we're all together, and we're not just recording together, we're recording in a completely different time zone to how we normally record. We're on the other side of the planet.
Yeah, it makes a difference to the other side of London.
Yeah, so we're in Japan once more. We return to the scene of the crime from 2019 to go deeper into the country and its culture. We planned out quite a hardcore itinerary for ourselves over the course of 7 days, starting in the sort of southwest of the country, working our way up all the way to Tokyo to end with. Where are we right now, Jake?
Right now we're in Kyoto. And this is only day two, and we've already been from Osaka down to Hiroshima, back to Osaka, and from Osaka to Kyoto.
Yes, we just pulled in by train this evening, and we've done so much in the first couple of days, and we arrived very late, 24 hours on the road to get here, so we're still... The clocks are running backwards, forwards, side to side, really. We have no idea where we are or when we are.
I mean, thank God for a beautiful rail infrastructure, because it's been astonishing the amount of rail time we've already used in those brief 48 hours. But we've traversed a good quarter of the length of the country, maybe, at this point already.
Absolutely. And we find ourselves in quite classy digs right now. We're staying at the Hotel Higashiyama, which is a Kyoto hotel, which is a nice way to cap off a day of, I don't want to say quite cheap thrills, but perhaps not the classiest thing you could do if you came to Japan. We went to Universal Studios, which is pretty high up on the geek list of things to do. I think right from the very beginning, when we were planning to make our trip to come back here,
we knew that Universal Studios would be quite high on the list, right?
Well, I mean, it was a point of debate, would you say, Steph?
I mean, I think we, you know, last time we didn't do a lot of cultural activities. This time, hoping to do more of that, but we have just spent a whole day riding big roller coasters. So, yeah, there was a point where I think we were not necessarily considering doing it.
Well, I'd say there are two things that have happened since 2019 in terms of what happened, what things opened in Japan that we said if we go back, we have to do this. And one was the Ghibli Park, which we're going to visit later in the week. And we'll talk about that at length later in the week. The other thing was the opening of Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios Japan. So that's one reason. We talk about the, you know, pop culture is a broad church.
Well, I mean, last night we were at an incredible bar in Osaka called Bar 6 Blue. And this was a place that, the kind of place that you only see in films, where there was only four seats at the bar. It was tiny, just one barman doing everything. And so three out of the four seats were us. One was another guy in a suit who was very happy to take pictures of us and strike up very fragmented conversations. But one of the things that he did say were the three words, Japan loves USJ. And so as a sign that our trip to Universal Studios Japan was a good part of the itinerary to add on in the last few weeks. I think I felt assured last night that we made the right call.
Well, I felt assured after all of the deep dives you'd been doing into Reddit and the subreddits such as r/rollercoasters, talking about the way to almost professionally go about tackling USJ.
Yeah, and I sense a jokiness in your voice, Michael, but I think
the people
of r/rollercoasters really helped us out. I think we will get into it, but I think by 10 o'clock this morning, we had already covered off a lot of the key items we went to the park for.
I am not joking whatsoever, because one thing that you'd read about and you'd relayed to us is that there's a secret opening time that's actually before the opening time of the park. And if you get there, you might get an extra half an hour on the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And in that time, we packed in one of the most important and most popular right in the park, and we managed, because we were there so early. We were there, what time were we there? 7 o'clock, half seven?
Was it?
We were there at seven.
Yeah. Ready to pounce and run, you know, saunter, jog through the park to the area we want to go to.
Walk. Walk with purpose.
So we were able to tackle that, and in the space of what? So we arrived there at 7:30. And we left 4:30, something like that. So we were there for 9 hours. And we did 10 rides. I think the best way to tackle it really is probably a top 10, because we did do 10, nice and easy. That's a round number. We can go around. Maybe we can do it where we list off our top 10. And when we get to a point where we've all mentioned one of them, we can then go in depth. So we should probably, by way of introduction, sort of say that USJ is split up into different areas, mostly now, you know, focusing on certain big franchises. They have the area that's Harry Potter area. They have the area that is Super Nintendo World, which is mostly Mario stuff. They have areas where it's called Hollywood, where they've got a lot of other film or video game related franchise things happening. Also a kiddie area, which we didn't go on any rides in, but that had this unholy trinity of kiddie characters that never really should be seen side by side. Hello Kitty, Sesame Street and Snoopy, which was pretty amazing as a fan of the Snoopy comics to see so much Snoopy stuff going on. I was wearing a Snoopy t-shirt today and I got commented on many, many times. But you had a t-shirt on as well, Steph, didn't you, that got commented on?
I was
on.
Wearing a t-shirt to USJ. Thank you for pointing that out. No, I had a Golden Kamuy t-shirt with a good character on it, which, yeah, got recognised, which was quite nice.
That's good. Then they go outside of the church of what brands they have at USJ. They do appreciate all sorts. But
we should also mention there is Minion. Was it Minion Park?
Minion yes. Land?
Yes. Which is also its own area.
Minion's Dominion.
Yeah.
There is that as well.
And Amity Island or Amity Cove.
Which is kind of Jaws and Jurassic Park. That's a really funny one because that seems to be the old Universal stuff. Mm. Because if you wind back the clock, of what used to be at USJ, even a few years ago, there was some older, more classic 1980s kind of popcorn Hollywood film rides that have now disappeared. Like Back to the Future's gone. There's a Terminator 2 ride that's recently closed as well, to make way for other brands, which we'll talk about shortly. We also visited it during its annual Halloween celebrations, the Horror Nights. So a few rides had reskins to fit the horror theme, which we'll come to, because that was quite fun to discover as we went through. So should we start off with our top tens? So I'm going to go around. So Steph, I'll start with you, then Jake, then me. What was your number 10, Steph?
My number 10 was the Universal Monsters Horror Maze.
Legends of Fear.
Legends of Fear.
Jake, what was your number 10?
My number 10 was the Universal Monsters Horror Maze. Legends of Fear. Was it Legends of Fear or Legends of Horror?
I think, let me double check what this is. It is Universal Monsters Legends of Fear.
Legends of Fear.
Not horror, but fear. And, well, they're universal in many ways because that's my number 10 as well. So this was the first of the Horror Nights that we've come to on in this top 10, but it wasn't the first one that we went on. And something that we discovered quite quickly was all three of these Horror Nights reskins were maze-based. And why was this number 10 for you, Steph?
I like a horror maze. I like the Universal Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, etc., are deserving of grotesque, bizarre, jump scare, maze walkthrough treatment.
Yeah.
I think I was expecting, I don't really know what I was expecting, to be honest, but not what we got, which was about five people dressed as Frankenstein at different points, some werewolves. Yeah, it was quite random.
Yeah, the maze format of ride, if you can call it a ride, attraction, is just a walkthrough. Maybe you go through some early theming kind of queuing area. This one had hardly any when we went in. Mm-hmm. And you're just sort of thrown into a constant forward progression through corridors where doors open or people just jump out from behind curtains. Or sometimes there's something nice and interesting in animatronic or whatever, which we might come back to. But this was one where my first problem is I don't really think of many of those classic Universal films they're referencing as Legends of Fear, as you say, Legends of Horror, perhaps, Jake, but not necessarily fear. Mm. Frankenstein, that first movie, James Whale, not anything to do with fear, really. But it leans into those stereotypes, doesn't it, where it's got Frankenstein's monster tying down Frankenstein and then giving him the giving him the shock. Yeah, it was probably narratively the loosest thing we did.
Yes, I don't think there was really a narrative. Mm-hmm. I think it was more just like a best of these classic monsters.
Phantom of the Opera at one point.
Yeah.
Came in quite fun, shouting quite about Christine.
There was a lot of red velvet curtains and hands coming out of them. And yeah, that was quite good. But yeah, not necessarily the most focused piece that we enjoyed.
I think there's probably a very basic sort of level of enjoyment or sort of credibility for these sorts of experiences where we happen to be generally in groups of younger Japanese teenage girls who were together, and when I say together, they were actually like holding on to each other going through these rides screaming. And I guess it is just, you want to just be shocked out of your skin by people running at you. That's what these mazes do. This was definitely the worst.
Yeah, I think as much as the makeup and costumes might be fantastic, these were like the most stereotypical versions of all of these classic monsters, to the point that we've seen them so much, you're never going to be afraid of them.
Sure. Should we go on to number 9?
Let's do it.
Jake, what's your number 9?
So number 9, coming in with Minion Mayhem.
Oh. I've actually put this down as Minions of Mayhem, like it's Legends of Fear. That's my number 9 as well, Steph. Yeah.
That's also my number 9.
We are in complete, simpatico here, aren't we?
Okay. So Minion Mayhem, there were strong conversations about it on the subreddits.
Oh, really? You knew
there was some approval, but I think the approval came from perhaps more family-focused users.
Mm-hmm.
Bonus points, initially pre-ride, because we are all fans of the single rider. The opportunity to join groups of three or odd numbers and sit, park yourself on the end, and we're not together as a group, which is great because, you know, we all hate each other secretly. So an opportunity to sit by ourselves is fantastic. So the single rider queue on Minion Mayhem, we got in, I'm going to say, less than 10 minutes, and the standard queue was 100. So fantastic. But world building, great. You're inside Gru's lab. Lots of screens giving you Despicable Me backstory. It's really dressed up. It looks properly shiny and new, which is exactly what it is. It is a reskin of Back to the Future. Or not a reskin, it's a brand new ride, but it's taken the place of Back to the Future. But ultimately, the ride is you stationary in a vehicle staring at a giant screen, which kind of has this feeling of a mix between the IMAX and the Las Vegas sphere, I guess. It curves around you and throws you into a Despicable Me plot involving the daughters wanting to get Gru a present for their adoption anniversary, which is quite sweet. And also all of us, meaning everyone in these different carriages, is being part of an experiment to be turned into a minion. But it kind of just made me feel motion sick because there was no substance to what we were seeing. And we'll talk about this with future rides, that when you have a grasp on reality, like you can see a physical object, you can see something tangible, that kind of helps you get a grounding as to where you are and disorient you in a nice way. Whereas this, I have no grounding here. I'm just staring at this big screen and I'm being thrown around in a car, essentially. And so I get travel sick at the best of times. But this had a story I didn't really care about and was told in a way I didn't really care about either.
And told in a language you didn't know.
Yes, but I can't knock them for that. I can knock myself for that.
All of the rides were in Japanese, which meant some of the more narrative but based bits were.
This Minion Mayhem did have subtitles at points, which some of the others didn't, so yeah. Credit to them.
But we lost out on Steve Carell. I have no real experience of the Despicable Me franchise. I've not seen any of them, so that was lost on me. But I did appreciate the theming of the whole area and going into it. But it is a very old-fashioned sort of ride in the sense that it's like Star Tours, the Star Wars-based ride that was made in the 1980s, I think, where you are being shaken about on a pretty much static ride with screens in front of you, and that's the trick of the eye that makes you feel that you're moving. And in this one, I think we'll come back to it, because you can really feel the sense of these various generations of attraction design. Some are track based, screen based, 3D based. So most of these were originally 3D and they've recently got rid of that and just gone back to just staring at the big screen. But yeah, any comments, Steph?
Just that it made me feel sick, and yep, that's it.
I like that the one that made you feel sick is ninth.
There's a lot to be said for not being bored by something.
Exactly. Eighth for you, Steph?
My eighth was Sadako's Curse.
Ooh, okay, yeah. Jake, what's your number eight?
My number eight is Chucky's Carnival of Chaos.
Okay, so this is where we all depart from each other, because yes. My number eight is Jaws.
Wow, okay, interesting.
So let's move on to the next one, and once we've ticked one off all our lists, we can talk about it. So what's your number seven, Jake?
My number seven is Jaws.
And your number seven, Steph?
My number seven is Jaws.
Okay, so let's talk about Jaws. Talking about old-fashioned rides, this is one of the oldest formats of rides from Universal. If you go to the Universal in America, they'll have a Jaws ride like this, and it is just a pleasant tour around Amity Harbor, and there's a shark.
Yeah, pretty much. It was a very sunny day when we went. It was nice to sit down and enjoy like a sunny boat ride with the added theatrics of our boat driver shooting the shark from Jaws multiple times. Yeah, I had fun with it.
Is this maybe the turning point where we go from bad or negative to sort of middling? And this is a solid ride. There were some kids on the ride with us that were really enjoying it. Because some of these rides are for your younger kids. They're not all for 15 and 18 up or the taller ones. So this is one where I got to give a shout out to the captain of our ship, she gave a great performance. You were on a different boat to us, Jake, so I don't know how your captain went down, but she had to play that surprise. She had to shoot that petrol tanker to explode the shark. She did it really well.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many of these things, and particularly in the horror mazes we did, it's all in the choreography, like the skill in being able to time stuff every time. And like in the mazes, you're doing the same routine multiple times a minute and trying to really commit to it. And so to be synced up every time on the Jaws ride, to know that you've got to hold up your fake shotgun at a certain moment and point it one way and then the other way to accidentally shoot a bullet that's going to accidentally go near a gas canister to launch this fireball. I was really impressed. I thought Jaws was really good fun. Mm-hmm. I think there's nothing wrong with it, because it's not trying to give you something that it isn't. Mm-hmm. It felt more like a theme park show as much as it is a coaster, because it is on rails and you are moving around. But really great design. I thought the world building was brilliant. And what really helped with this, we were promised a 30-minute single rider queue. And I was going to say, less than a minute? We walked in and we were on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I mean, in a way, that was the greatest thrill.
One thing I loved about Jaws, and this is something I will say it's a real positive for it, is I like that sense of tradition and legacy in history that means that there's a Jaws ride, a whole Jaws area, loads of Jaws merchandise, a special hot dog that was shaped like a shark eating the sausage.
Jaws had the best merch on site.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go for anything ourselves, but I mean, there was some fantastic Jaws merch. And I think part of that is down to so many years ago, Jaws has a brilliant logo that mm-hmm. was created.
The iconography and the music and everything is so strong.
Yeah.
And I say that at this time where it feels like particularly this Universal Park is bringing in just whatever brands and whatever characters it can. I guess Despicable Me and the Minions is one of its newest home brands. But you go to Disney, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, I wonder...
It's very clean.
What could you possibly reskin that as mm-hmm. anyway that would have as much popular appeal? Because it's brilliantly intergenerational. And I do love the fact that there are 5 and 6-year-olds out there that love Jaws, who have never seen it, but they've been on that, and Jaws is their favourite thing.
Exactly. And it's nice. It's a good start to... You're not immediately trying to get kids or the more casual riders just into thrills. It is narrative-based. It is something different from that. So that's Jaws. By no means a bad one, but that was there. So where were we up to?
That was seven.
Seven. Because my number seven over to me was Biohazard the Extreme Plus.
Mm.
What was yours? No, your number seven, Jake. Your number six now, aren't you?
Yeah. So my number six was Mario Kart Koopa's Challenge.
Rule number six for you, Steph?
My number six was Biohazard the Extreme.
Okay, so let's roll over to number six for me. My number six was Sadako's Curse. So we've both said Sadako's Curse. What's your number five, Jake?
Sadako's Curse.
Okay.
Mm.
So this is a reskin of what's usually a space adventure.
And which was, prior to that, E.T.
I guess feeding into the story of like what Universal used to be and what it is now. And I think a really good reskin of that. Usually you're traveling around the solar system or the universe, going from planet to planet. It's a indoor ride where you're being zoomed between different dioramas inside. But the twist here is this is a cursed ride at the research, Paranormal Research Department?
The Occult Research Lab.
Who have got hold of the videotape from The Ring. But there are two scientists, and the female scientist has been semi-possessed by Sadako and wants to let her loose within the research facility. And so you are thrown onto this escape pod, being shot out of the tunnels out to safety. And I will say, so what was great, there's the thing is almost in entire darkness as you're spinning around and going through these tunnels. And that's a great idea. If you're going to reskin an entire ride, why not just cover that up by making it all entirely dark?
Well, it's only a partial reskin as well. Yeah. So it's just, I think, until January or something.
Yeah, exactly. So it's for the Halloween Horror Nights. Yeah. And I'll say that this is definitely coloured by the single rider experience, which we might come back to, which is that when we are going into single rider, you're then paired with this one. Each car held three people, but you were facing, the opposite ways in pairs. So I was sat next to a teenage girl whose two friends were behind her, and she was just having a whale of a time, and we just kind of kept catching glances at each other in those moments of flashes of light halfway through. We had a fist bump at the end. So that definitely coloured this for me. I had a great time on this ride, even though it's quite a minimalist one, quite effective one maybe.
Yeah, I think so, and great use of screens. Like, there was only a few moments that you see throughout, but just little snippets where you've had some really strong horror acting from the researchers, and where you've got the trapped screaming guy who's you can see is being projected onto what would have been like a nebula or something. You can see the silhouette of it, but they've done a great job bodging this one to fit, and I can't help but admire it.
I also love it. It feels like quite a deep hole to have a ring ride at something as big as Universal. It's quite good to be in that universe. Any comments on Sadako, Steph?
Just that I kind of wish that I had seen the space version of it.
Yeah,
I think we all felt that afterwards, didn't we?
Yeah, but I enjoyed it. The kind of ride in the dark.
Yeah.
Like you, I had a buddy who was also enjoying the ride who I didn't know. So I feel like, you know, it's not the escape from Sadako's curse. It's the friends we made along the way.
I think what was really funny is that I think we were on three successive carts, weren't we? Because the carts turned around, rotated. At various points, I could see Jake in front of me, and various points I could see you behind me, Steph. So we just caught every now and then just had a. There's a bit at the end where you just stopped in darkness, and our two carts were just having some sort of like conversation between each other. They were shouting things out and screaming and applauding. Definitely a fun one, enlivened by the fellow travellers. Mm-hmm. So that was
number
Sadako's
six.
Curse. Does that mean we're moving on to five now?
Yeah. So that was your five.
Did you just you said your five?
I haven't. What's my your five? Number five was the Mario Kart Koopa's Challenge.
Right. My number five is the Flying Dinosaur. So I'll let me move over to number four, Jake.
My number four is Biohazard.
Have we all said Biohazard the Extreme Plus?
Yeah, yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
So this is the second of the three mazes for the Horror Nights that we're yet to talk about. The first one we went in. So, we're up to you, Jake. So, tell us about Biohazard. It's the Resident Evil franchise. Yes.
This was definitely helped by the fact it was our first one. And I've never done anything like this. I've done the Black Mirror Maze at Thorpe Park, which is a terrible mirror maze with like an AI who hacks your mind, and it's rubbish. But this was something brand new for me. And I've watched Resident Evil be played over the shoulder of people. And I know that to be spooky and scary and have lots of iconic stuff, like umbrellas and raccoons and things that I'm not confident talking about. But I thought this was a whole heap of fun. We were thrown in to Leon's route. There were two different routes.
Leon and
that
Claire.
Could take you around the maze. And I thought makeup effects here, really strong. I'm sure fans of the franchise would recognize some bulbous creature that surprised us, and we were able to gun him down. We had some characters that walked with the purpose that suggests they are iconic characters. and it just seemed to get lots of great reactions from people. And I really liked, compared to the other horror mazes, the interactivity with it, because that was the thing it didn't have. The other ones didn't have that. Sometimes we were passive and we were more explorative, and other times we were being told what to do, or we were picking up a gun and firing it. And so for me, as a first entry into this kind of hybrid walking adventure, a great time. And actually maybe the highlight of the whole thing, Steph screeching like a banshee when the first terrible creature turned a corner. It was a great howl. And it appeared many times throughout the journey, and I loved hearing it.
Yeah, I really liked this one, but I had to push it down the list because it was too scary for me. And I don't think I would ever do it again. Resident Evil is so scary, and putting people in a basically like amazing makeup and prosthetics and stuff. Just, yeah, it was very effective. My heart was racing at the end.
Yeah, this was one where, again, probably because we'd booked an express ticket where you get your timed slots for some of these rides, you don't have much in the way of a queuing experience to psych yourself up for it. We were just sort of thrown into a group, which I'm pretty sure had six people to begin with, and two of them just disappeared immediately. And then you push through a door, and then suddenly there are zombies, and they're being pushed through forward momentum. And yeah, it does have... This is one where there were more human actors maybe than some of the other mazes, where they were lip-syncing to recorded dialogue all in Japanese, so we weren't really getting much of it. But you do get to see Ava Wong turns up, and then lots of baddies from... This is basically based on Resident Evil 2, which had a big remaster and re-release a couple of years ago and is kind of a fan favourite of the franchise. Although I still think in the moment you have no idea what's really going on. You're just being pushed from one thing to another, and then suddenly there's animatronic Leon Kennedy fighting a big boss at one point. And then, yeah, we were firing light guns at a massive screen, and then the lights cut out, and then the lights come back on, and there's actual massive hulking actor playing that that big villain, which, yeah, lots of fun. Apparently you could lose this game. I think that might be what the plus is, that maybe they redid it a year later and made it so you can't lose. Because one aspect of the Resident Evil games is that at the end of every chapter, you get rated on various gameplay attributes, and then get a rank for every chapter. And we were all given cards on the way out saying we got S plus rank. I'm like, we did not get S plus rank. We were all get eaten if we were actually playing it. But yes, Steph, your reaction was priceless. Shall we move on to the next one? So where were we then? So who just read out?
Jake's number four was Biohazard.
So my number four was The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man. Have you done your number four?
My number four was The Chucky's Carnival of Chaos.
Great. Okay, so we're now on to threes. What was your three, Jake?
My number three was The Flying Dinosaur.
Okay. Your number three, Steph?
My number three was... The Spider-Man.
Oh, wow. So we've really split now. Okay. So my number three was Chucky's Carnival of Chaos. So have we all said Chucky yet?
Said Chucky.
Because I thought this was a riot. I loved this. And everything you just said, Jake, about Resident Evil fans might find details and things that they enjoy. I wouldn't even really call myself much of a fan of the Child's Play / Chucky franchise. But I've seen a good deal of the films, particularly the ones that this one's pulling from, which is the sort of 21st century run of films from Bride to Seed to Curse to Cult of Chucky. And we knew as we were walking in, we walked through the door and there was a poster, because you're going to a carnival and it's this carnival starring Chucky and Tiffany, his wife, and also his child Glenn / Glenda, and we just know them because the Chucky films have a sort of slightly transgressive camp quality, quite fun value to them. So I knew that this wasn't just going to be fully jump scares nonsense. There was going to be some fun to it as well. And this one was just full of those details. I almost to the point where I wish there wasn't the forward momentum. There were some rooms where I was like, ooh, what's this poster in the corner? I want to actually look at that. Or we were behind some very jumpy young women. And they go through a curtain and you kind of see between them that a character dressed up as Tiffany, who's the Jennifer Tilly character, comes out of a curtain, and they jump and scream. And by the time we go in, she's hidden again. And she's like, come back out, please. Scare us. We want to see you. So this one had a lot of fun and a lot of detail and some of that narrative stuff that the other mazes lacked for me. I really enjoyed it.
I think maybe I was in a bad position in this, that I missed so much stuff.
You were behind us, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and so a lot of the big moments, I was walking past an empty curtain or an empty hole in the wall. And then the thing that frustrated me on this was, I think the timings were slightly off, or they hadn't quite figured out the best way of playing it, because at multiple points, staff had to come in to organise everyone to make sure they're staying in the same spot, which... makes you just think, okay, so we have to stay here for a bit because something's being set up to come out here at the right time. And so it didn't have the best flow for me. And also I don't really have any connection to the Chucky series, so it didn't really do much. But then again, I don't really for Resident Evil, and that one kind of worked. But I can gather with Chucky that if you're into this stuff, that maze must have been full of wonderful treasures.
We have someone here who's into that stuff, right? You've watched a few of them, haven't you?
I think I've watched all of them many times. this was so much fun just to see, like you said, Michael, just seeing all of those little bits and the weird fangirl vibes that I got from myself from seeing Chucky. Like, why? But okay.
I did hear you go, he's there.
That was a really great bit.
It's really exciting. It gave me, like, when I was, like, really young and I went to, like, Mr. Blobby Land and saw Mr. Blobby for the first time. Like, just, oh my God, he's real and he exists and he's here to entertain me. I had a good time. I think there was, like, some slight timing issues and it probably would have been a bigger favourite if...
Yeah.
The timing was kind of worked out. Maybe if we'd been also clinging to each other and walking all at the same speed like the girls in front of us.
You can't really go three abreast, can you, really, through that stuff?
I had fun with it. I wasn't quite as scared, but I kind of enjoyed the jumps and the thrills and all the like weird, grotesque stuff that was going on. It was very like unhinged, which
for,
I really enjoyed.
For me, it was like it had that perfect quality that maybe some of the higher... entries might have as well, which is it made me realize how much I loved the franchise that it was, you know, pulling from. And I was really excited. There's a bit right at the end where somebody should say it was this did have 3D and you were given glasses, and I very quickly discarded mine because it was like blurring my vision and I wanted to see everything. But there's a bit where you throw the 3D glasses in a bin at the end and it's in front of what looks like a portrait. Oh no, it's such a glass case with Tiffany inside. And I was in the process of saying, Steph, turn around, let's do a quick selfie. And it opened. And was there a Glenn inside or something? Just for one final scare. So they got me there.
good scares all around.
So that was my number three. Have you said your number three, Steph?
Yes, my number three was the Spider-Man ride.
And your number three, Jake, was?
Flying Dinosaur.
Okay, so let's go over to number two. My number two is Mario Kart King Koopa's Challenge.
Wow, okay. I thought you were quite cool on that one.
Well, when I hastily wrote this top 10 while we were waiting for Yakitori to arrive, this is one where I really just think the theming and the context, this will live in my mind more than all the other rides just because all of the stuff leading up to the ride was absolutely astounding. I suppose
this is our way of bundling Super Nintendo World into the conversation.
Yeah, but I also think that some of my favourite rides, like the Tower of Terror, Haunted Mansion, or Phantom Manor as it is in Paris, it's just as much the stuff around the ride as the exact ride itself. So yes, this is the Mario Kart ride within Super Nintendo World, and I guess we should say like the actual ride itself, none of us were really that hot on it.
Some of us were hot shit at playing it because maybe one of us got the highest score.
You got the highest score. But this was one where, like a couple of the other ones we'll talk about, it was a mixture of 3D projected elements with physical. You were on a track going through physical sets, and however, you were wearing a visor and you had pop-ups. Sort of augmented reality pop-ups on it, and you had a wheel, you were four to a cart, you had to turn at various points to simulate like you're playing Mario Kart, you had triggers where you could shoot shells at other baddies or other racers, and it was just so busy, and I was frustrated because I wanted to enjoy the actual architecture of the ride, and it just was very chaotic and busy. However, what I did love was for the 25 minutes, half an hour before you even get in the cart, you go through King Koopa or Bowser's castle, and it's just full of great details, from seeing all of the trophies from various Mario Kart races and courses, seeing King Koopa's library and the sort of copywriting job that someone had to put little books in his library was really fun.
I enjoyed becoming the princess inside.
Yeah. And the one was, the princess is always in another castle, which felt like another sort of philosophical self-help or examination book. There were just so many that I took so many pictures of that.
Captain Toad, a treasure hunter's story.
Yes. Oh, I love all that stuff. So that pushed this up so far for me, because I think I'll be thinking about that more than most things we actually experienced today. But we could talk about Super Nintendo World in general.
Yeah. Well, I think I was approaching this listing very much from the ride experience, and that's maybe why this one didn't get to the very top, because I think it was really fun and it was really different. I've never done anything like it, but I was so instantly focused on the gameplay that I can't really remember much of what the world was like. There was a great bit where you have, there's a cloud break and then you end up on Rainbow Road, and it does, in those moments you feel like you are in the game. But prior to that, this was only what, 6 hours ago that we did this? I can't actually remember much of what happened in the game. But Super Nintendo World as a whole was great. The immersion, and I think we'll probably talk about this in another ride, is that aspect of these kind of contained worlds within the wider theme park, and the skill that they have at making them feel separate. And Super Nintendo World has this, where you initially are just walking up a path like any other path, and then you walk through a familiar green pipe, and then from the other side of the green pipe you are within Peach's Castle from Super Mario 64, and the music is playing that you know from being in exactly that setting and being in that position, and the framed pictures on the wall are the same that you're used to seeing. And you walk out of the castle into this amazing glade of green cubes and there it is, and you are in a Mario game, and all the things that you're used to moving in the way that they do, like shells moving between boxes, and the granite square things, I don't know what they're called, jumping up and down. And I thought, theming here was unparalleled. I've never seen anything like that. It was really special just to be in there. So if we were, if we were marking on theming world, it would be much higher.
Yeah, I think that they do such a good job of hiding it around the park. You can just see a little flag poking up from various places, and then walking through Peach's Castle and then seeing that kind of vista is just amazing. So good. But I think, I'm the same in terms of if we were ranking it by the whole area, it would be probably the highlight. But just by ride, it's what I imagine if you were actually playing Mario Kart for real, it'd be very overwhelming and confusing and not like racing at all. Just too many things going on.
It's probably a ride that gets better with time. Maybe the 10th time you go on it, it's amazing, because you know exactly how it all plays out, and you can experience the world and play the game.
How many times can you go on a ride though in your lifetime?
We have to revisit 10 times.
I've just pulled up my photos in my gallery, and because I took so many of them, and it's just so good, because you go in and you're greeted by the massive stone statue of Bowser. You go around and then you have the portraits, and then you have all the trophies. You have this study/library which we were just sort of poring over, because you'll be queuing there for a long time even if you do have a time ticket. And there's so many sort of trinkets on the table, so many references, but it all homes in on getting ready for the race. And it's all the strategies, and it's Team Koopa versus Team Mario going for the Universal Trophy for Mario Kart. And so you're being introduced to all of these aspects of that aren't in the Mario Kart games, which is how do they prepare? And he's got a big open book, which is how to complete Rainbow Road. And then you go through, and the sort of staging area is themed as almost a TV studio. And it's MKTV, Mario Kart TV, and it's announcing all of the races like it's a football squad or starting grid kind of stuff. And I was just I was blown away by that kind of stuff. That was really the fanboy aspect for me. And then you go into a final room and there's a moment of absolute horror where you have all of the racers' kits lined up. So you have like the, you know, the racing outfits for Mario and Peach, Luigi, Toad, and then Yoshi. And you realise that Yoshi's helmet in this fictional universe is his face. So he's got to wear a Yoshi face on his own face. I was just so blown away by all of that stuff. I was still riding a high of it and then disappointed by the ride, I'll agree. Yeah. But Super Nintendo World, more than anything, because we talked about this before, I think, maybe even on the Japan miniseries back in 2019 where we went to Tokyo DisneySea, where it's amazing how you can subtly go from one region to another and it's suddenly you're in somewhere else. But this felt like you'd really had gone through a portal into a whole other world. Just the bright colours and the everything Mario. Oh, so good. Okay, so Super Nintendo World, out of this world, the ride, not so much. So that was my number two. Have we done your number two, Steph?
So my number two was Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey.
And Jake, your number two?
The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man. Is that the correct name?
I think that was, right? Yeah.
Oh, no, it's now the Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man.
In 4D, the ride.
No, 4K, 3D, the ride.
I think we've all said that one now, haven't we? So that's my number four, your number three, Steph, and your number two. So take it away, Jake. You're the big fan.
Just a great load of fun. I mean, this feels like... I think part of what I liked about this was, from a setting point of view, this was a Spider-Man piece of, I'm going to say, content that was not related to any of the kind of bogged down 21st century antics of Spider-Man. I say 21st century post Maguire stuff where
cinematic,
everything's it felt cartoonish and silly and fun and just like a very enjoyable superhero romp that you were thrown into the middle of, and a great hybrid ride. And so that was something that I tease was missing from Minions, where I just felt like I was watching a giant cinema screen whilst being made to feel sick. This was the fact you were strapped into this vehicle called the Scoop, which was a vehicle for investigating news. And around the city of New York, Doc Ock has created an anti-gravity gun and he's flinging everything around the city, and he's kidnapped the Statue of Liberty, and along with Electro and Green Goblin and someone with venom.
Scream. One of the symbiotes, the sort of sexy lady symbiote.
Okay. Are terrorizing the city. And so in the Scoop vehicle, you are on a track and then you move through in this dark space a combination of really nice set designed New York that's kind of gnarly and graffiti and kind of like 80s, 90s New York. It's not hip and trendy in any way, and it's not trying to be. And then between those sets, it beautifully merges with these ginormous screens where these characters will fling themselves onto the hood of your car or throw an exploding, what are those goblins things called?
His lanterns that he throws?
Yeah, and so he'll throw it from the screen, but then it will explode through a real brick and you'll feel the heat and the flame from that. And so really, I think I loved the creativity here and the fact that we got into a habit with all these rides where Michael would give us trivia and facts and context before we going on, just to hype us up. And this one came out in 1999 and it won loads of awards for 10 years or so. And I can see why, because even now, like, we've got it at number two here. Like, we all had a brilliant time and this thing's 24 years old and it doesn't feel dated. Mm-hmm. It felt more inventive than the thing that was brand new a couple of years ago with the Minions. Just a fantastic time.
Yeah, it really gets to the heart that what we liked was this hybrid, not necessarily one or the other. And I love that it's kind of similar to Super Nintendo World, that you really did just get immersed in this cartoon comic book world. It seemed like it was the late 90s animated series that you were going into, which was a little bit little bit naff, but the sets really did have that big blocky designs and colours, and it was really, really great. And also quite a thrill ride as well. You're kind of surprised when you are really thrown around by it. Such a nice universe to be in.
For sure. I think as well, you know that you're going to get swung like you're Spider-Man at some point, which is like the bit that you're like waiting for, right? But I think they time it really well that they give you some other thrills that you're not expecting before they let you have the big swing and fall. It was super thrilling. I really liked this one.
Yeah, and as you say, Jake, it has a sort of fun and freedom and freewheeling nature to it that Spider-Man hasn't had on the big screen. It's so happy to be cartoony and comic booky and have strange outsized characters, because Hydro-Man's in there as well. Did you mention him? No, he's the guy that turns up.
We got Splash.
Yeah. You know, you can't really imagine them being so goofy with Spider-Man on the big screen. Even the animated Spider-Man has a certain sort of coolness to him, right? With the Spider-Verse films, it's not as goofy, really. But yeah, really fun, really great. So, was that all of us? Have we all said number two now? Mm-hmm. You said your number two,
yeah,
Steph?
Yeah, my number two was the Harry Potter Forbidden Journey.
And what's your number one, Jake?
My number one is Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey.
My number one is Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey.
Okay, so that means that you and I have given that number one to Forbidden Journey, and Steph, you must have given it to the Flying Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Okay, what should we dive into? Should we go Flying Dinosaur because it's got the one vote at the top?
Yeah, okay.
All right, Steph, mount your defense for a ride that I do really like.
You should say I enjoyed like everything. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I just love big roller coasters. That is basically my defense, that I spent most of my childhood, like once a year, me and my dad would go to one of the big theme parks in the UK. Like the year that I was finally tall enough to go to Thorpe Park was like the best. The best day that I'd had up to that point. And I was still wearing shoes that were like slightly platformy so that I could get on everything. And it just, yeah, like this ride just made me feel that like I was 12 again and just experiencing something like that for the first time again. It was so thrilling.
I don't think you would have gone it when you were 12, because it's like the most extreme ride, right? And it's also very specific in terms of the dimensions you have to be, because you're suspended.
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't have been tall enough still. My main problem was that I was quite short, so yeah.
But this, so to describe this is a suspended ride where you are sitting in a chair with a harness around you, and the barrier comes down over you, and then before you're ejected onto the ride, the whole cart of four. Four. Then moves backwards and up, so you're like just free hanging almost, looking straight at the ground. Your legs are braced as well, so unlike Air, Nemesis, and those sorts of rides where your legs are free, your legs are tight. I thought this. I gave this number five, only because
he's going to say theming.
No, I'm not actually. No, because I did say
as we were going around and we got to theming the could be better. Like, what's the theming here?
Because it's meant to be kind of Jurassic Park.
A flying dinosaur that's escaped from the lab.
They've also haven't given it a name, which is annoying. Like it could be a velociraptor or something, but it's just the flying dinosaur. It sounds like a children's book.
Yeah. No, because I think one my favorite ride when we did Tokyo Disney Sea, or one of my favorite rides, was the Indiana Jones ride, which doesn't really have much necessary theming to it. And same with Paris. I quite like a really good roller coaster. My problem with this is that it was a bit. It's so thrilling.
Yeah.
Damn straight. And so fast, and it is pure adrenaline as a ride, but I just sometimes like a bit of breath, a bit of dynamics to be able to, particularly when you're an outside ride and a very high ride, you kind of go up to a very tall point. There's like one brief second where you can see everything. And when you read the advisory as you're queuing, and it's like people who are afraid of heights, people who are afraid of this and that and the other. And like, actually, there's never a point where it registered to me that I was actually very high, because I was just being thrown around so fast and so quick. Afraid of the dark. There was a bit where you go in the dark, but it was just over so quickly that I couldn't really ease into the thrills. I guess it was just like, so it's the same. There's that one in Thorpe Park when we went, Jake, which was the incredibly fast one, the one that's themed around a Formula One racer, which is amazing, but it's just the speed. But really good thrill ride, absolutely.
I think I like to feel, as I'm being strapped into the chair, like, have I made a huge mistake? That's the best feeling. And then 20 seconds later, when you're off the ride, you're like, that was the best decision I've ever made.
I did have a really good fist bump with the Japanese dad next to me, which is good.
I thought this was really good fun. I think the physical exertions it had created new sensations that I haven't had before because of the structure of the ride, and that being on a roller coaster where the point of weight on your body is your chest felt really different, and a kind of added a strange kind of, not claustrophobia, but I don't know, like the tightness of it felt like you could not escape this thing even if you tried, which added to the danger, I think. And being on, because you're lowered and just you're looking downwards, meaning that you are, when you hit a loop, you will be on the outside of the loop rather than on the inside of the loop. So you have these sections where you're almost like you're cartwheeling, and all you can see is the sky, and there's nothing else. And it was a lovely clear blue sky. So I thought, from a sensation point of view, this was really brilliant. And to look down in the last few moments and see that my necklace had come out from my t-shirt, and so I was like hanging and looking down, and that was like even added to the jeopardy of it. But I thought this was great, and it did allow us to have the moment where we walk under the sign for Jurassic Park as if we are about to enter and Richard Attenborough's about to say welcome to. It was fantastic.
You had the best sign of the day as well, where it said please remove all wigs and hair pieces. I'd love to know how many wigs have been lost on that ride. So should we talk Potter?
Let's do it. So this is how we started the day. So the good people at r/rollercoasters had almost laid out an itinerary that was really, really helpful, but essentially said, if you want to prioritize anything, Forbidden Journey, Flying Dinosaur, they can be got to relatively quickly next to each other, and if you're there early, you can get them both done really quickly. And I think, well, the park was open at 7:30, and we had done both of these by 8:15.
Yeah, so efficient.
Yeah. And so the gates open, we leg it through to, there's a pile of rocks and some elm trees. We walk through the path by the elm trees, and much like Super Nintendo World, where this thing just emerges, and it's this amazing trick of the eye, where it's a, admittedly large, but it is a model of Hogwarts from Harry Potter, but it's scaled so perfectly that you just feel like you've turned a corner round in a forest, and there it is in all its glory. And in front of it, you've got Hogsmeade and the wand shop and the sweet shop and the Hogwarts Express and the Butterbeer station, and all of it, like the instant immersion was brilliant. And the music cues for that franchise are so familiar and so like deeply ingrained in me as being someone that was going through watching those films and reading those books at the same age as the characters, that I couldn't help, like you saw me when I was there, I was like something like suddenly clicked.
You were able to place the score playing in the background at the exact moment of the film.
Yeah. And so we wander through, well, I say wander, we didn't have time to wander. We walked. Yeah, we actually came back to the world later just to actually look at all the details that we'd missed. And so we run through the village, and then we enter the queue for the Forbidden Journey, which takes you on this maze through Hogwarts, which was great. So we go through rooms that have got the talking paintings, and we've got a common room area, and then we weirdly we have to enter the lockers, which I don't remember from the films, but drop off all of our things into these lockers so that we can come back out and sit on what I think what I think the ride should have been called, the Enchanted Bench. And so, because everything was in Japanese and wasn't subtitles, we did actually have to look up the plot after the fact.
And there wasn't really much plot, really, was there?
Yeah. But from a, I don't know, from a structural point of view, from a creative point of view, this was unlike anything in the park, unlike anything that I've done. I mentioned that Amazing Spider-Man had hybrid stuff going on, but where you're either with a screen or on a track. But this was, we found out afterwards, was on a single robot arm that could essentially fling you in any direction, give you any momentum that it wanted. And so we were rushed through flu powder from one location at Hogwarts to the next, and then we were being chased by a dragon, and then we were in a Quidditch match, and then we were in the Chamber of Secrets, all through this incredible mixture of 4K screens that were wrapping around us, sense feelings like the heat from a dragon's breath, and feeling as well like you're on a coaster. That was the thing that amazed me, that we were never on a track. But there were sections of it, particularly when you're in a Quidditch match and you're rattling down the side of the arena and you feel like you've got kind of a juddering beneath you. It's like, it was amazing how much it translated that artificiality into a really authentic feeling. So from a creative point of view, but that immersive point of view as well, really brilliant. And it had all the cast members in there interacting with you as well, albeit dubbed. But yeah, I think for me, a very well-deserved number one spot.
For the first ride of the day as well.
Yeah, it was all downhill from there.
It was going to win.
But I think I've talked a lot about ride history and bored you with it in queues, but as like the modern version of what a dark ride could be. And when we were at Disney, did we go on any dark rides? Like the classic version of that is where you go into a big warehouse-like structure, go on a track, and then you will go through a retelling of a certain film, certain story, or as a jam on the themes and locations of that. So Peter Pan being one, and then E.T. being a sort of slightly more later spin on it. This one felt like a really great evocation of what people love about those films in a way that was thrilling and did mix up technology in a really interesting way. Yeah, so I love this one.
Yeah, a lot of really good fun, very magical. Yeah, like you said about the kind of finding out that it was just a big robot arm doing everything afterwards kind of made it even more so. Yeah. Yeah,
that was the magic.
Yeah, it was so impressive. I've really never encountered anything like that before. And I was a little bit worried that the amount of like VR, 3D, etc. that we were in for on this day was just going to end in me not being able to go on anything anymore because I felt too motion sick. But actually, yeah, it's just done so well, I think, because you have that, your eyes are doing work, but also you're feeling the motions as well. Yeah, great stuff. And very impressive big spider models as well.
Some really nice models.
It was quite scary. Yeah, we got a lot of horror out of this day.
How very fitting for a trip in October while the Halloween Horror Nights is going on. So yeah, Universal Studios Japan, thumbs up. I vaguely remember when we came to Tokyo Disney Sea last year, there was this vague feeling of there being some standout moments, but overall it wasn't an essential experience that you'd want to repeat. But how are we feeling, admittedly, the evening of, but how are you feeling about USJ?
I would 100% go back. I should say also that I got a sticker from, we all got stickers.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all got stickers of the Spider-Man ride from a host who was nearby and had a little bum bag full of stickers. So I think if we return, my mission is to get more stickers.
And a picture.
From different areas.
Picture with Pikachu next time.
And a picture with Pikachu. Yes, that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with the guy in Bar 6 Blue. He said that Japan loves USJ. And he wasn't lying. Like, the atmosphere there was fantastic. Like, everyone was just absolutely buzzing all the time. Yeah. And it was really funny that once it got to early afternoon and the families with kids that had been there at seven, and you just saw all these prams with like toddlers that were asleep being rolled around. And I mean, that was us a few hours later. If we were that knackered, but I mean, Japan loves USJ. We loved USJ. It was a great day.
Because as we were leaving, we then had in the opposite direction, kids coming straight from school, people going straight from work to go and have their horror nights. That was really fun to see. Like, there's still, you can understand how this is one of the most visited attractions in the world. Yeah. What a great and very cultured start to our trip around Japan. We'll be recording again later in the week. We'll have, I think, Jake, you've got a few top tens you want us to go through.
Well, I think that could be fun. I think with Ghibli Park, I mean, that could well be a two-hour episode if USJ, something entirely unrelated to our podcast, has managed to almost creep up to an hour and 10 minutes. God knows what the Ghibli Park one will be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've got Ghibli Park plans. Who knows what else might happen? There's so much on the itinerary. It is an hour-by-hour spreadsheet that we're working from.
So yeah, top 10 train lines, top 10 food... top 10 snacks in the Lawson or the 7-Eleven, or who knows. Let's see what we'll land on next. But this is it for the USJ episode. Thanks, listeners, for tuning in. We should also say thanks to the Hotel Higashiyama for putting us up in Kyoto. We're going to go and have a nice long night's sleep after our 30,000 step day.
You say that, long night's sleep. We all know that the alarm is going off very early and we're heading to a shrine at 6:30.
We are up in 5 hours and 57 minutes to meet the call time. Brilliant. But for now, listeners, thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you next time.
Ghibliotech is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Harold McShiel, and Steph Watts. Our music is by Anthony Ng.
Hello, we're Austin and Finian, and we are going to talk about Universal Studios Japan, our least favourite rides to our favourites. Our least favourite, remember, this is all our own opinion, was Freeze-Ray Tigers.
It was like a waltz where you were spinning around on ice.
And if you're really not a Frosty guy, I really don't think it's worth queuing for.
No, if you are Frosty, it's not worth queuing. Right, yeah. Our next ride...
Yeah, it was Minions. Wasn't it? Yeah,
it was Minions.
So, Yoshi's Adventure was...
It was
like a viewing.
It was like a viewing point in Mario where you were like going round, and it was...
Used eggshells for points. So, fly to the Hippogriff is next. And this was actually a really fun ride, but it was really short.
Jinx. Yeah. So you go up and then you do a massive drop down. And then you curve around and do lots of spins.
But I don't think
it's only like 8 seconds.
I don't think it's worth queuing for. Our dad was like over the height of 1.95, so he went in Chucky's Carnival of Chaos.
And Universal Monsters.
And Universal Monsters, which we won't talk about. So next was Minions Mayhem. I thought this was quite a fun, nice ride.
It's just that the talking at the start.
Yeah, there was way too much talking at the start. But if you're a thirsty guy, I think it's okay for you.
So there was like a loop-de-loop in it, and you did a massive drop, and that stuff was funny in it.
Yeah,
but that was not the best ride.
It's not the best ride.
Number five is Jaws.
Remember, this is our own personal opinion. Can I talk about Jaws? So there was a staff at the end of the boat that was like, it was like...
She was screaming all the time.
No, she was like... She was like, yes.
Entertainment.
It was entertainment at the start, but then she got a phone call that there's a shark in the pond.
Yeah.
And it actually made you think that she didn't know. And the shark looked so real, but it was actually robotic. And when she kept shooting guns at him,
it all splashed you on your face. So, let me talk about Sadako's Curse, okay?
Yeah.
So, Austin didn't really find this suitable ride for the story of it, because it's based off the ring. When the man jumps out of the TV and all the wow and stuff. But it's a roller coaster that's in the dark when it's spinning around. And you're like going around and doing a few drops, and there's a rainbow tunnel in the middle of the ride.
Like you said, it's usually space.
Yeah, it's usually called Space Fantasy, but it turns
when you're whizzing around planets. That's quite fun. But we didn't do that.
Yeah.
So
number seven.
Next is Mario Kart. I actually think Mario Kart is number eight. But we put number eight because Finian liked Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man more.
But let's,
but
do
let's
Mario
just do Mario Kart.
So you're on a VR.
Yeah, you're on a VR. And
you were spinning around and you were like shooting eggshells at Bowser and going through clouds. And at the end, you did a massive Rainbow Road run.
Yeah, that was fun. So can I talk about Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man in 4K 3D? So you had 3D glasses at the start. The queuing was very entertaining.
Wait.
It was.
Oh, yeah, it was.
It was.
And it was really massive, the queue as well.
But the ride, you were like sent on missions by Spider-Man and you could see different bad guys from Marvel coming out of
you also,
and it actually felt like, so you know the Waterman, I don't know his name because I'm not a giant fan of Marvel, but you know his name, it actually, when he attacked you,
it splashed you with water. There was also fire shooting at you, which like, it actually felt like fire. There was someone shooting bombs and it came through a building. And then at one bit, you got lifted up a building and at the end, you dropped down.
Okay, so nine, Hollywood's Dream.
And you might be noticing, the queue is always massive. Someone on YouTube said it was like 3 hours. But we were quite lucky, actually. It was only about 40 minutes.
Oh, by the way, Flight of the Hippogriff, I forgot to mention. It's Harry Potter.
Yes.
Anyway, so Hollywood Dream, you can either do normal rides or backdrop.
So I know.
We went normal. There's this big drop and then it's endless.
Yeah. So it's a drop that is 44 metres. And then you're zooming around at 56 miles an hour. And you go over the front entrance of Universal Studios and then you go back round. And then you also go over a pond and spin around. I would recommend to do this at night because the lights are absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Okay, so last one, Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey. This is a brilliant ride. It's like a VR thing. They're all speaking Japanese, so if you're English, then it's fine. At the start, Hermione Granger is like, San, Ni, Ichi, and then
you
go, and then... You go down.
It's more of a roller coaster than a ride. So at some bits you get
a roller coaster is a ride though.
Oh yeah, that's true. And you get at one bit, this is really cool. You get dunked into like a screen room and you're flying around Quidditch and playing Quidditch. You're also going to Spider and Voldemort appears in some areas.
And it's just really cool. So thank you for listening.
Oh, no wait, there's one more ride. Okay. Which is, I didn't go on this one, not because I was scared. But it's just that, the thing is, the queue was too big. So this is Flying Dinosaur. You get dunked into a cave head first and lots of stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, that was the Flying Dinosaur. So thank you for listening to our radio blog. I forgot for Finlin to mention the Flying Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. And,
yeah. Thanks for watching.
No, not watching, listening. So, yeah, that's our radio blog. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.